From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, former HUD Secretary Julian Castro drops his bid for the presidency. Why did his campaign stall, and what's next? This is Texas Matters. From Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. Last year, when Julian Castro declared that he was running for president, few were surprised, but it was clear, with a crowded field of candidates, it would be an uphill battle for the former San Antonio mayor and Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. But sometimes campaigns catch the zeitgeist. Castro gained national attention in 2012, when he was the first Mexican-American to deliver the keynote address at the Democratic National Convention.
And my mother fought hard for civil rights, so that instead of a mop, I could hold this microphone. While she may be proud of me tonight, I gotta tell you, Mom, I'm even more proud of you.
In 2014, he resigned as San Antonio mayor and was appointed by President Obama to be Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
You know, as mayor, Julian's been focused on revitalizing one of our most wonderful cities, planning thousands of housing units downtown, attracting hundreds of millions of dollars of investment. He's built relationships with mayors all across the country. He's become a leader in housing and economic development. And it's precisely because he's lived out the American dream that he'll work his tail off to make sure more people can travel that same path.
And in the last presidential campaign cycle, Hillary Clinton publicly considered Castro as a vice president.
So I am going to really look hard at him for anything, because that's how good he is, and he deserves the accolades he's receiving.
Of course, Clinton did not tap Castro for the VP post, but perhaps it was that experience which showed him that he needed to set his own course for the White House if he was ever going to get there.
Julian Castro will be making a very important announcement leading up to the 2020 presidential bid.
I am a candidate for President of the United States of America.
But Castro's candidacy did not catch fire. He had some moments on the debate stage. Nevertheless, without the campaign big cash haul and the double-digit polling numbers, soon after the start of the new year, he released a video where he announced that he was out of the race for the Democratic nomination.
But with only a month until the Iowa caucuses, and given the circumstances of this campaign season, I've determined that it simply isn't our time.
Texas Public Radio's Joey Palacios reported the story of Castro's exit.
A son of San Antonio, Julian Castro said he didn't grow up as a presidential frontrunner, but that was part of his fight. Appearing on MSNBC with Rachel Maddow, Castro went deeper into the decision of ending his bid.
It just became clear that we didn't have the resources, didn't have the organization because of the lack of resources. Mm.
Castro consistently scored in the low single digits in most national polls. It's those polling numbers that kept him off the last two debate stages.
Certainly there are things that we could have done better in the campaign, and we're going to have a lot of time to think through that. But it also is about timing and the mood of the Democratic Party.
Castro did fare better in Univision polls of likely Latino voters, polling above 10% in June and September, but he still trailed Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. Although Castro's message did not resonate as well as he had hoped, this is likely not his swan song, according to Henry Flores, a political science professor emeritus at San Antonio's St. Mary's University.
He's got name recognition now. He knows what kind of a national organization is required. He knows how much money is absolutely required to put one together. He knows what he needs to say. He knows what he cannot say.
Castro, who is 45, has his age to his advantage, Flores says, which would give him time to make another bid in 4 or 8 years.
Julian will only be 53 in 8 years. By that time, he can lay a foundation, develop a national network that will help get him elected to office. I think this time around was a good kind of boot camp for him.
The former San Antonio mayor had his moments of spotlight in the race. Castro took a reform approach to immigration. In June, he and fellow Texan Beto O'Rourke verbally sparred over repealing a law that criminalizes border crossings and limits the number of daily asylum cases.
Some of us on this stage have called to end that section, to terminate it,
Some, like Congressman O'Rourke, have not.
I'm looking at just one small part of this. I'm talking about a comprehensive rewrite of our immigration
laws.
That's
not true. And
in October, he walked asylum seekers from Matamoros, Mexico, into the United States. He was the only candidate to visit Matamoros to see the growing humanitarian crisis there for himself. Castro's campaign suspension comes a month short of the Iowa caucuses, a political barometer for support in the primaries. But late in his campaign, Castro raised concerns that Iowa and New Hampshire being first limited non-white candidates.
You start your nominating process in two states that are some of the whitest states that lack people of color.
Henry Flores, political science professor, says that's a fair assessment, and states with more racial diversity should go first.
Perhaps California should go first.
Although Castro's run is over, the bid can still resonate with Latinos. Henry Cisneros is also a former mayor of San Antonio and a former housing secretary like Castro.
Only in America can a young man grow up in tough circumstances and fight his way through the best colleges in the country and gain experience to become the leader of his community and then run for president of the United States.
I'm Joy Palacios in San Antonio.
Days after Castro dropped out of the race for president, he released another campaign video. This time, he was announcing he's endorsing Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren for the nomination.
There's one candidate I see who's unafraid to fight like hell to make sure America's promise will be there for everyone, who will make sure that no matter where you live in America or where your family came from in the world, you have a path to opportunity too. That's why I'm proud to endorse Elizabeth Warren for president.
Just before that endorsement announcement, I went to Castro's defunct campaign headquarters. There were still the posters and signs on the wall declaring that this is Castro country and that Julian is the future. I sat down with Castro to talk about what went wrong and what happens next.
In your announcement video, you said that this isn't our time. So what do you mean by that?
Well, the success or failure of candidacies is due to a lot of things, how the campaign is done, also the circumstances of the race, and I could tell that this just isn't our time. I learned that in 2005 when I lost the mayor's race. That wasn't my time, and I feel like that now.
It not being our time, so who is our? You know, whose time are we talking about?
Me and all of us who ran the campaign and all of the supporters and volunteers and people who believed in the vision that I set forward for an America where everyone counts. We challenged America to be the America that it can be for everybody. And I believe that vision will come to pass in the country one day. But not now.
People who are willing to carry the banner for the little guy?
Well, to do it in a way that is uncompromising with regard even to issues that people don't want to talk about on the campaign trail, whether it's police reform or homelessness or kids that are caught up in a foster care system that's broken or migrants that are seeking a better life, that are not a danger to any kind of danger to our nation, but would make it better. We ran this campaign in a different way from everybody else, in a bolder way from everybody else, for people who needed a voice more than anybody else. And I believe that a lot of people responded to it, but that it just wasn't the time. Right now, people are very cautious in the Donald Trump era. They just want to get rid of this president. And they believe that caution is the best way to do it right now.
Did you, coming into the race and running and bringing forth these issues of about like the working poor, transgender issues, trying to decriminalize entering the country without authorization, these issues that you championed, did you kind of move the clock a little bit forward? Now may not be our time, but the time is now closer than it was before because you came up and you've articulated these ideas?
I believe so. I believe we helped shape the debate on immigration, on a couple of other issues that the Democratic nominee will... I believe the Democratic nominee will reflect some of the way that I've shaped the debate, especially on an issue like immigration. And maybe more importantly, that there are a lot of people out there that have seen that a campaign can be run boldly and fearlessly on these issues. And even though we didn't win this time, I do think we moved the ball forward. And one of the things that I learned clearly from my mother's experience was that you don't always win, and that progress doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen because of one campaign. It doesn't happen because of one person. It doesn't happen because of one movement, even. It happens over time. And I believe that I've made a contribution to progress for all types of people who are often cast aside in this country that need a voice.
So your mother, Rosie Castro, ran for city council in San Antonio under the ticket of the Barrio Betterment Committee. They lost against the Good Government League, record turnout. That night during the concession party, I guess you might want to call it, that rang out that we'll be back, we'll be back. It was the rise of Latino politics in San Antonio as a serious movement for change. And then we basically got rid of Latino politics, just became politics in San Antonio. And because we realized you couldn't get elected unless you addressed these certain concerns about proving equality of life for the entirety of the city. And then you were on city council, twin brother becoming a state representative, and eventually you becoming mayor and your brother becoming a congressman. So is that the trajectory that you think that you continued when you ran for president?
Well, I mean, there was nothing set in stone about whether I would get to run for president or not. But I do think that my journey reflects a story of progress in the country, in San Antonio and in the country, for sure. And when you dissect how that progress came about, it's not only the story of one family, really it's the story of structural change. The mid-1970s lawsuit that MALDEF filed, which eventually helped lead to single-member districts in the spring of 1977. It's the story of Henry Cisneros becoming the first Mexican-American mayor of a big city, and Maria Berezabal becoming the first Latina in 81, and her, you know, in many ways I see a reflection of my race today in her race in 1991. Even though she was not successful, I remember the issues that she took on and how bravely and boldly she took them on, how she was criticized at the time for saying that we need to focus on things like affordable housing and that workforce development and economic development were one and the same, which is, that's the Chamber of Commerce line today, but they resisted it for a long time. So it is a story of both personal progress, structural progress, and political progress that adds up to the ability of more people to reach their dreams in the community and in the country.
Some people might look at your campaign and the lesson learned is talking about the working poor, talking about transgender issues, talking about border equality or decriminalization, and those are loser issues, that you're not going to win on those issues.
The issues that people consider quote-unquote loser issues now often become the issues that people campaign on and win on in the future. And I believe that's going to come to pass. whether we're talking about the issues of police reform or including all of the LGBTQ community in the fullness of opportunity in America, or addressing immigration in a humane way. We're going through this moment where people are very cautious and anxious about Donald Trump, but that's not going to last forever. And the calls for equality in our country, the conscience of this country, will move us toward justice and equality for all of the people we were standing up for.
What did you learn about the country? I mean, this is the first time you've run for a national office. What did you learn about the electorate? Did you find that it's as divided as we've been told, or that people all across America have more in common than we have separate?
People have more in common than you'll get a sense of from watching the political shows. Most people are not overly political. Most people are not tied necessarily with all of their heart and soul to one political party or just one ideology or one candidate. They're more open to considering different ideas. But right now, there is a sense that, hey, we just need to get this guy out of office. This president is uniquely bad president. And so you do have a consensus of trying to, you know, focus on whatever is going to guarantee getting Donald Trump out of office. Especially among primary Democrats.
This president, Donald Trump, running for re-election, he has a power base. If he's this bad individual that you describe, I mean, what's his grip on power? Why is he still, you know, the president? Why does he have a good chance of getting re-elected?
Donald Trump is a good marketer. That's his strength, marketing. He understands it. He understands media manipulation, changing the conversation. He understands what appeals to a certain segment of our country. Donald Trump's ambition is to be a president for some people, not for all people. And ultimately, I think that's going to be his undoing, is that now that people have actually seen what he's like as president, he has a track record that they can judge. He's going to lose because enough people have had enough of him. And you can see that in different ways, not only in the polling, but also in the fundraising that he's done. He's underperformed compared to other incumbent presidents. I heard that among people out there who said that they had supported him in 2016, but now they were not. We see that in Texas, especially in the suburbs. People who used to be Republicans that now either have voted Democrat or at least are independents, very clear that that progress is happening. That's because of how bad Donald Trump has been. So there's this media narrative that's been developed about Donald Trump as this, oh, he's this Svengali, this political magician that has this, that wields this power over people. He lost by 2.8 million votes. He won electoral college victory by 77,000 votes collectively in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. He won Florida by 1 point. And now he's going in with a track record of how bad he's been every single day as president. He's not just a theory. He's an actual bad leader. He has us on the brink, perhaps, of another war that would cost a lot of lives and a lot of money that nobody wants, that he has created himself. I believe that if we do what we should do and we articulate a strong positive vision that includes everybody, that we're going to defeat Donald Trump. And I'm going to work as hard as I can in the months to come to support the Democratic nominee to defeat Donald Trump.
Do you think, since Donald Trump says that the Iranian government was getting ready to launch terrorist attacks that were going to take American lives, and they use that as a justification for this bombing attack, that they need to present that evidence to the American people and that particularly with this presidency, because number one, we've been down this road before, and the American people were lied to going into Iraq, and also this president has shown that he has a strange relationship with the truth.
No, absolutely. Look, what we should have learned from the experience with the Iraq war is the American people deserve the truth instead of lies. And especially with this president that has such a clear track record of lying to the American people, Congress needs to do its job right now of oversight, of holding this administration accountable for presenting the case. I don't have confidence that this administration is telling the truth. I don't believe it. Why would anybody believe it? At the same time, he has us on the brink of war. My hope is that they can tamp down the escalation of this conflict. But in the meantime, the American people deserve to know why he's taken the actions that he's taken in the first place.
Are you troubled by President Trump's obvious special connection that he has with Vladimir Putin?
Sure, yeah, and I said that during the campaign. I'm troubled that this president has not held Russia accountable for meddling in the 2016 election. He is not holding Russia accountable for its aggression. I'm troubled that Donald Trump tried to extort the Ukrainian president to do his political dirty work by holding military aid hostage until he did it, or promised to do it, and then switching course when he got caught. This president has put his own interests, whether they're business interests or political interests, ahead of the interests of the American people over and over and over again. That's a huge problem for our country. And it's especially a problem when he's taking us to the brink of another war that would cost a lot of lives and a lot of money.
The structural situation that we have with the Democratic primaries, you brought to light that this seems to give an advantage to some individuals who have able to do well in places like Iowa and New Hampshire, and other folks like yourself who are trying to talk about issues that aren't really prominent in those two states. What's a way forward to try to rectify that?
To rectify the
fact that we have this system in the Democratic primary to elect a president, to select a nominee for the Democratic Party, and that seems to be geared towards not the strong points for what the Democrats are about.
Look, it doesn't make any sense the way that we do our nominating process right now. The fact that Iowa and New Hampshire always go first, they don't reflect the diversity of the country or the party. Not only that, the Iowa caucus is a complete mess. A complete, complete mess. If I told you that the way we were going to do voting to start nominating a president was there's no early voting, you can only vote at 7 o'clock on one night, no mail-in voting, no accommodation for shift workers who can't just leave to go vote at 7 o'clock, no accommodation for people with disabilities that need help, they can't just go at 7 o'clock on a snowy night oftentimes to go caucus, no secret ballot so that somebody that might not want to show up and get into a shouting match with other people about who they support or feel like they have to defend it. If I said that's the way that we're going to start nominating a president, you would say, oh, did a right-wing Republican design that system? Because it discourages so many people from actually participating. It's crazy. And the Democratic Party can't pretend that there's not a problem with that. We can't call out Republicans for trying to suppress minority votes and limit access to the voting booth and then go around and start our nominating process in a state with a caucus like Iowa it doesn't reflect at all how we should be doing voting and that hardly has any people of color in it. It's crazy. It won't last very long. It's going to change. And just because this campaign is over doesn't mean that I'm going to stop calling for that.
So let's talk about what you're going to be doing next. I mean, you've got some recovery time. You need to recompile yourself. What's it look like?
I'm going to figure that out. We're going to make sure we wrap up this campaign well, take care of the staff, go through our lessons learned for the future, and then I'll figure that out. You know, there have been different points in my life, most recently when I got out of the Obama administration, where the future wasn't completely clear. And I've always felt comfortable with that. I have no doubt that, you know, things will go well, and I'm looking forward to spending more time with my family here in San Antonio.
Are you committed to campaigning for whoever the Democrat wins the nominee?
Whoever wins the nomination, I'm going to be there. Whatever they need, I'm going to help make sure that I'm there. I'm sure my brother Joaquin will also. Both of us want to do what we can nationally and here in Texas. I'll make sure that I help the Senate nominee as well as people that are running for Texas House seats across the state. We have an opportunity to take back the Texas House in 2020. I'm going to be as helpful as I can be with that. So even though this campaign has ended and it's going to become a little bit quieter, I'm still going to use my voice for people and for issues that are, you know, essential to support for progress.
Do you think things may have been differently if you ran for the Senate against John Cornyn?
I don't think so. I mean, that's not what my heart was into, and I've always believed that you should first do something that you're actually passionate about. So I'm happy that I ran for president, and it didn't turn out the way that I wanted to, or obviously anybody on the campaign wanted it to, but I'm glad that I did it, and I think we made an important contribution to the race. I think I ran a unique campaign that we can hold our head high about and be proud of, and that I'll be proud to explain to my kids in full when they're old enough.
And other small kids today, maybe watching you campaign, do you think, or even young adults who are thinking about going into politics, do you think that they watched your campaign and saw there is a lane, there's room? I mean, Julian didn't actually get the brass ring, but maybe someone else could? I mean,
I hope that there are kids that were watching out there that think, hey, I can do that too. Hopefully people got inspired about politics and public service and understanding that politics doesn't have to be only about shortcuts or compromising who you are or trying to please only certain people, that you can be who you are and still be in politics, and you can be successful. Yeah. You can focus on not only what's fashionable, but also on people who need you, people who are not going to have champions unless you're their champion. I hope that a lot of young people out there that are thinking about getting into politics will take that example from the campaign. And even though we didn't win, maybe somebody who comes along at a different time, maybe somebody that's more talented at all of it, will be able to win. And more importantly, will be able to make the changes that we need to make in the country when they do.
Julian Castro is a former candidate for president, the former San Antonio mayor, and also the former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. He has endorsed Senator Elizabeth Warren for the Democratic nomination for president. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.